Je suppose que je n'ai pas besoin d'introduire Elisabeth de Debussy, qui vient de publier quand même, qui est basée à Paris et qui est critique d'art, auteur, activiste depuis très longtemps et qui a surtout publié ce livre, Ce que le sida m'a fait, art et activisme à la fin du XXe siècle, paru cette année à la Maison Rouge, que je vous recommande très très fortement.
L'éditeur, c'est J.R. Péringier, collection lecture Maison Rouge. Voilà, c'est pour vous.
Et du coup, l'idée, c'était de mettre Clara et Elisabeth en conversation autour de ce film, en introduisant aussi ce dont tu parles dans ton livre.
Hola. I just wanted to say something. Sorry, I was a bit nervous with the evening, with the curtains and everything. So one thing about this film that I forgot to mention at the beginning, but I thought it was a theme, we're going to talk about it now, is that this was shot completely incognito. It was completely illegal when it happened. So Vladimir Tevez at the time was slightly older than these people. He was over 25 years old. He was the son. He's still alive. He lives in Rhode Island, and he was the son of like two people who were not rich by any means, but who were strict militants of the Communist Party. So, but he was friends with these people. He was from the region of Pinar del Rio, and he was a good student. He went to college. He was studying at the School of Cinema of La Habana, which is a really good cinema school. And so he had already released a couple of short films. He had excelled at the cinema school. So he was able to enroll in a special program from the University of La Habana that was the first exchange program with the University of the United States, with the Brown University, which is in Rhode Island. So it was very unprecedented because it was, of course, like right after the fall of the Berlin Wall, but it was, you know, it was still embargo, and the communication between the United States and Cuba were basically illegal. So some people from Brown University were able to go to Cuba to work with young, prominent, or somehow like promising filmmakers from Cuba, and he was one of them. And they brought the digital equipment because that was something that wasn't available around. So basically how he shot this is that he talked the people from Brown into lending him the equipment for like a weekend, because he was supposed to shoot these people that lived in caves in like some other region, and instead shot this. Because this was, they were his friends were killing themselves in this way, and basically, if he wouldn't have made this document, this story was basically being covered by the Cuban government. This was not being recognized; it was being completely invisibilized. So he shot the material, and as another part of the international exchange that Brown had proposed to the University of La Habana was that these prominent students would come to Brown to show their work and have like conversations with the students at the university. So he smuggled the tapes, it's where VHS tapes, among other material that he had shot. Like he went basically through the customs and they were like, wow, these are a bunch of tapes I'm bringing to show in the university. And they were like, oh, okay. They didn't look through. And when he went to Brown, he came and were like, well, I didn't shoot the people in the caves, I shot this instead. And they were like, whoa. So they helped him basically edit the documentary together. That's why he shot in 94, but he's like kind of like the copyright, whatever. It was registered in 95. That's when he edited and released it while he was in Rhode Island, so in Providence. So it was shown back then, it created some kind of like ripple. There were some articles that are actually, a lot of them are available as PDFs online if you Google, if you're interested. Like you can Google it, and there's like a New York Times article and some articles from other newspapers from Providence. And then that kind of was it. Then the documentary was barely shown from 95 until I contacted Vladimir again in 2015. And I showed it in 2016 in New York. Unfortunately, he couldn't come because he's become really sick since then. He doesn't have HIV for what I know, but he has other like medical complications. And it was also shown at the Berlin Film Festival. They had a special section on HIV kind of like documentary. So it was shown also there last October. So I just wanted to give like that bit of information about how the film was made. So I think it's like important, the way like as a film object in itself is just really particular. And the way like it's, and there is this sense of urgency in the way that it's made, like it was basically shot from with a camera that was hidden in a backpack and with like a microphone that was like somehow, so that's when they are sitting on the street and there is people passing, they're somehow like move, like they are kind of concealing the fact that they have equipment and, because that was also basically illegal.
Yes.
Well, what to make of this film? I don't know. I'd like to begin like by you know, kind of associations I made. There was a banner in ACT UP Paris, which I remember, which was saying, par le sang, par le sperme, par la loi. Through blood, through semen, through law. And this film makes me think a lot about this banner, because indeed, it is indeed the law, the repression, the condition in which, I mean, at least the discourse of these young people is really highlighting the fact that they are more repressed as rockers than if they inject HIV and if they get thrown to through sanatorium. So there's a link here that I make through the means of you know, getting infected by HIV, which is semen and blood, and then law, which is as corrosive and contaminating than the two former things. So that's the first association I make. And I also make another association with the situation I know better, because I know nothing about the situation in Cuba, I have to say. I you know, I have nothing more to say than to be very shocked by that film. Is I think in France, there was a turn in anti-HIV fight and struggles when there was Jean-Marie Le Pen, the father of Marine Le Pen, who shouted in the press and everywhere that people, he would call us a very disgusting name, he said Sidaïk, you know, instead of people with AIDS, he would say, I don't know how he would say that in English, Sidaists, maybe, which means, you know, which has something to do with a kind of voluntarily injection, you know, contamination. And he actually advocated for exactly what was happening in Cuba. He said sidatorium at the time, you know, sidatorium, the sanatoriums that those people are, those young people are talking about are, you know, sidatoriums, as Jean-Marie Le Pen would have noted them. So it was a condemnation to invisibility, again, to, you know. So here you have a discourse that actually deals with this invisibility, with conditions of life, which can be compared, of survival, which can be compared of the conditions they have as rockers. The conditions they have as people with HIV is somewhat, well, another condition in which they are made into a kind of community and spend the rest of their lives there. And you know, one of them says, we are sick to be alive. We are more respected as sick people than as rockers. I mean, there's all this comparison between, you know, the fact that leaving the community out in Cuba, in Pilar del Rio, and living as a community in those sanatoriums. And okay, that's the association that makes, you know, the fact that here, I remember very well when Le Pen made this, you know, statement, Father Le Pen made this statement, and immediately I think that it was a shift, there was a turn, I think, in the struggle against AIDS, and I think, you know, many, there was a feeling that it was too much and we had to begin to fight. We had to forget the fact that we were totally amorphous because of what was happening and being in pain and, in, you know, and suddenly we had to fight. And this film is also, for me, is also a reason to fight, actually. I don't know what to make about this film. I just look at it. I don't make any moral judgment because I think there is no moral judgment to be made. But I think also that, you know, again, the way AIDS is envisioned here is as a kind of social fact, a fait social total, and we find it in Cuba and we find it here in the Western capitalist country. And then the third association I want to make is that, you know, at least to my knowledge, when I made my book, you know, I was thinking about the States, New York, Reagan, the advent of a kind of liquid state. And so it was under Reagan, but it was also under Mitterrand, and it's also under Castro. And this is something which made me very anxious and very, well, at least a bit interested. Voilà.
Well, I also want to emphasize that, like, I'm not Cuban. I cannot speak of the social reality of that place. I can only speak of my experience as, like, being in contact with the person who made the documentary and, like, wanting to somehow, like, share it 20 years after it was made, and somehow, like, also, like, bring some kind of, like, discussion or some sort of, like, reckoning with this social fact. Because, as you say, I cannot have a moral judgment, but I think it still is a really baffling document to witness, made for witnessing also. I was thinking about, like, the voyeuristic thing that you were mentioning about the film, and how that was, like, we were watching in a setting that was really not the one in which it was meant to be, and this is kind of it, you know, like, this was made to be shared, so these people had, like, the visibility that it was not recognized by the regime where they were living. So I can only speak about my experience as, like, talking with the filmmaker in order to be able to show the film, and my interest, or the conclusions or whatever I get out of it.